Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host. Today, Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington's College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. And today we have Troy Wood, who is the manager of Washington's Derelict and Abandoned Vessel Program. Or is it Washington's Abandoned and Derelict Vessel Program? I forget, but Troy will help us sort that out. Troy, how are you doing?
Good, Aaron. How are you?
So is it derelict or abandoned? Which comes first?
So it's the derelict vessel removal program.
Ah, okay. You know, I helped you guys on that. You think I'd know that by now, but maybe I just haven't had enough coffee. Anyway,
DVRP welcome. For short.
So we had done here about a year or two ago, and there were some changes in Olympia to the taxing structure, the funding structure. We want to talk about some of that. I want to hear about some of the boats you have on your list. I know you're looking at like 300 boats now that you want to remove around the state. So we're going to talk about some of that and what you see in the future. So why don't we start off with the changes in the excise tax, funding mechanisms, and some basic parliamentary things like that.
Okay, sounds great. So before we get into the new taxes that were deposited into the derelict vessel removal account, the way the program was funded up until recently was $3 from recreational boats registrations came to our program, and $1 per foot on commercial vessels came to our program. And that afforded the program about $2 million per biennium, so about $1 million a year to fund the program. That was for three people for the whole state. And then all the removals that we did. And that allowed us to remove between 90 and 125 vessels every biennium, which is a lot, and it's nothing to be upset about. But we always had a list of 200 to 300 vessels that we could have gotten to, that we could have removed had we had the resources to do so. And because of that, we always had to go to the legislature and with our hands out and ask for more funds to remove larger vessels or more vessels in a certain area and stuff like that. And they were getting tired of it as well. It's an awful lot of work to go to the legislature and say, can we have some more money, please? Yeah. We have to get our stakeholders involved and everything. And so it's just an awful lot of effort. And so recognizing that, we tried to come up with a funding solution for the last few years. And our best option or our best bet, along with our stakeholders' agreement, was to take a tax that's already being taxed on the taxpayers of Washington, which is a watercraft excise tax. And that's a tax that's on registration of vessels and stuff, the purchase of vessels and vessel-related stuff. It's a sales tax, basically. And it went straight into the general fund. And we felt that, well, if our vessel owners and vessel users in the state of Washington are paying this tax, maybe they should get some benefit from that. Mm-hmm. So we went to the legislature and asked them to divert some of that tax to our account. We only asked for 15%, but they recognized that this was such a great deal and this was such a great funding source for us that they increased it to 25%.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's the first I've ever heard the legislature ever doing something like that.
And I know that, in this state, there's historically been a lot of heartburn from the recreational boating community on the fact that the excise tax goes into the general fund and very little of it goes back into boater programs and projects.
Yes, that was one of our biggest stakeholders. They really loved the idea, and they couldn't find a downside to it other than eliminating the tax altogether. I mean,
right.
Having it diverted from the general fund to our program afforded the greatest opportunity for us to not only fund the program, but to help out those boaters in a tangible way.
Was that the Recreational Boating Association of Washington?
Yeah, ARBAW, as well as others, but they were the major push behind that, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that tax is is supposed to generate between 4 and 4.3 million to our program every year. So we went from 1 million per year to 4 million per year, plus our original 1 million. So we're looking at almost $5 million a year now, or $10 million a biennium. And that's just unheard of, unreal. And that's going to create so much work for us that we're increasing the size of our crew from 3 to 5 people to hopefully support that additional workload that's going to be coming our way. So we look forward to this and we're spinning up fast as we can. But the problem is the taxes didn't start getting deposited into the derelict vessel removal account until June 9th. And then we weren't appropriated a budget till July 1st. Yes, we were appropriated $4.3 million from the watercraft excise tax, but if the taxes aren't there, they can't transfer them to our account. So even though we're allowed to spend the $4.3 million, we can't spend it until the taxes are there, until the funds are there. And right now, we only have a little over $1 million in that account. So we're going to go ahead and start spending that $1 million, and hopefully the rest of it will come in as we go through the rest of this year.
Huh. You know, I'm curious, what does a, and I think our listeners would be interested in here, is what is a typical, I mean, if there is such a thing as a typical abandoned vessel removal project, and how much does that cost, and what do those costs look like when they're divided up? I know that you contract out to a lot of third-party folks.
Yeah, that's a great question. So let's start with the most expensive ones. The military, the former government vessels, you know, those vessels are really built really well. And so when you try and deconstruct them, they resist it, and it costs an awful lot of money, a lot of effort to remove those vessels and to deconstruct them. So they cost a lot. And our average cost for vessels like that is about $500,000 per vessel.
Wow.
And then you go into the construction of commercial vessels, and our average removal costs for those are about $100,000 per vessel. And then you get into recreational boats, and our average cost for those drop down to about $8,000 to $10,000 mm-hmm. per vessel. But here's the biggest savings that we can come up with is the vessel turn-in program. So vessel owners who can no longer take care of their vessels, or their vessels have reached their natural end of their life expectancy, can turn them into our program for free disposal. And that, we share the cost with the owners by asking them to get it to a disposal site or to a haul out facility to clean it up a little bit before they give it to us. And those costs are less than $4,000 per vessel.
Wow. So somebody, say here in Jefferson County, has a couple old boats on the back 40 on trailers and they want to get rid of them, they can call you guys and you'll be able to help with that.
Oh, absolutely. And if they have them in the same location, that reduces the cost per vessel even more, because we don't have to send out a crew to go get them at multiple times at multiple locations. So our mobilization and demobilization costs are shared amongst all of those vessels in that one general area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we try and lump these vessels together so we can save additional funds so we can remove even more vessels.
Now, what about the trailer? Does it have to be registered, or do you transfer title in any way? Or can you, what's the process you go through to remove a trailer and or a boat that doesn't have any history to it? Nobody knows who's registered to.
So there are ways that property owners can gain the legal right to remove property from their property. And that property could be vessels or trailers of vessels. And once they gain the legal authority to remove those vessels, then they can apply to our program for free disposal. And we'll take the boat and the trailer off their hands and dispose of them properly and correctly. Typically, we'll recycle the trailers as much as we can at a metal recycling center. And we're starting a new program with the help of Sea Grant and UW that, a new recycling program.
Oh, for these vessels. I want to hear about that.
Yeah. So we worked in conjunction with our partners like Sea Grant and UW to try and come up with a way to remove and recycle these vessels instead of taking them out of the water and throwing them on land. I mean, I do work for the Department of Natural Resources, which is not only aquatic environment, but it's also upland environment. So we don't want to, you know, create one problem in one area by removing it from another. So what can we do with these vessels? Well, the aluminum and steel ones are obvious. We can recycle those. But what can we do with the wooden vessels and the fiberglass vessels? And so we were looking for a way to recycle those. And we talked to a bunch of different companies that are in the business of recycling, like carbon fiber and fiberglass and stuff like that. And so we were trying to find a way, a path into the commercial environment to send these vessels and be utilized elsewhere. And our best option came up with this company that will come out, crunch up the vessels, throw them in a yard bin, and take them back to their facility and recycle as much of it as they can. So they'll recycle all the metal, they'll recycle the wood and fiberglass into other products, or they'll use it as hog fuel in the manufacturing of paper or concrete. Hog fuel is just a fancy word for the fuel that they use for the BTUs that they need in the manufacturing process.
So paper. That's interesting. That's the first time I've heard about that. That's great.
Yeah, they use hog fuel up in the Port Angeles area at the paper mill up there. I mean, or the Port of Port Townsend at the paper mill up there. And that's how we found out about the company, was not only through the use of hog fuel, but there was a study done by a college student in Rhode Island who actually took fiberglass vessels to a concrete manufacturing plant and burned them in the hog fuel. And what he found was that the emissions from that plant lowered during the time that they were burning the fiberglass. So the fuel that they normally used is more toxic to the environment than burning fiberglass. And they were able to do the same product, the same work with the fiberglass vessels instead of their normal hog fuel. And that's what gave us the idea of trying that here.
Now, I understand that that the fuel cannot go to any old cement plant. It has to be a newer cement plant that's been set up for alternative fuels.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. So it has to be a plant that meets current standards, and it can be upgraded. An older plant can be upgraded to meet those standards. But yes, so this company will take that fuel only to the sites that are approved to burn that hog fuel.
So I know it's been going on for a while. It sounds like all the pieces have to be in place. Everything has to be set up right for this to really start to be successful. And so I get the impression that's what's happening. All the T's have to be crossed, I's dotted, and then the market will hopefully take this over, be a big help with this. You know, sounds like a great market-based solution.
That's what we're hoping for. We're getting to the end of ironing out all the wrinkles in the recycling process, and hopefully the private sector will pick this up and run with it and make it profitable for someone. And that's what we hope, is that we can generate enough interest in these old dilapidated vessels that people will want to take them out of the water and send them through this commercial process instead of leaving them out there to pollute or endanger water users.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to, before I forget, the transfer of title. And I want our listeners to know that where would they go? Like, so somebody has, you know, like I said, a couple boats on the back 40. They don't know anything about them. Who do they talk to in the state or the county to gain title of those things, you know, for disposal?
So before they gain title, they have to gain the legal right to remove the vessels. And right now in the state of Washington, the only way to do that is to talk to your local law enforcement or your local county code enforcement.
Okay.
Because Pierce County does the junk vehicle affidavits through their code enforcement officers, whereas other counties will do it through their sheriff's department or the local PD.
So the sheriff would know who to talk to at the very least.
So if you contact either your code enforcement or the sheriff's department, they'll tell you who fills out the junk vehicle affidavit. Okay. And the junk vehicle affidavit is just for property owners to gain the legal right to remove property that's not theirs from their property.
Okay.
And then it's part of the due process. They're trying to give the owners of that property the opportunity to come and remove it before someone takes it from them. And once they have that junk vehicle affidavit filled out and signed by either the code enforcement or the law enforcement, then they can take that to DOL and actually gain legal ownership of the vessel if they want. However, our vessel turn-in program doesn't require that last step. All that we require is for them to get the legal right to remove the property and dispose of it. And then we'll take it into our program and dispose of it properly.
Okay. Well, that's great to know. If you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe. We're speaking with Washington's Abandoned Derelict Vessel Removal Program Manager, Troy Wood, which is a program embedded at Washington's Department of Natural Resources Aquatic Division in Olympia. Is there anything you want to talk about the future? I'm wondering, what do you foresee in the future in the next couple of years? You know, this big, in addition to new staff, more boats being removed, what do you envision 2-3 years down the road?
That's a great question. So with this additional money or funding that this program is going to be receiving in the near future, we hopefully will work through our backlog of vessels that are considered to be abandoned and derelict in the waters of Washington. And right now that list is over 300 vessels. So before, we had a capacity to remove about 100 vessels every 2 years. So that you can see how 300 vessels would take a long time to get through at our old funding level. So at our new funding level, we're hoping to get through that 300 and get to a point where we're no longer reactionary, but we're preventive. So okay. We hope to capture these vessels before they become abandoned and derelict through the vessel turn-in program. So in the near future, hopefully, we'll be spending more money on the vessel turn-in program than we are in going out and getting these abandoned and derelict vessels out of the water. And that's going to look like we're going to go into areas, geographic areas like Spokane County, Pacific County, or the Port of Port Townsend area, or Everett, and set up vessel turn-in days where we'll send out notices to the local populace, and we'll ask them to bring their old dilapidated vessels into this one location, and we'll accept them for free disposal. And then we'll bring in a recycling company to recycle all of them all at once. We're lowering our costs even more, hopefully. But by doing that, hopefully we'll capture a lot of these vessels that just need to be recycled because they've reached the end of their useful life before someone decides that the boat trailer is worth more than the boat sitting on it, and go launch the boat at the DFW boat launch and let someone else worry about it. So that's what we really hope to capture, is a lot of these vessels before they become abandoned and derelict.
So if somebody doesn't have registration or permission to dispose of the vessel, do they need to bring any paperwork? Will they need to bring any kind of paperwork to one of these vessel turn-in days?
Yes. So according to the statutes that govern the vessel turn-in program, we really have to show that whoever's turning it in has the legal right to do so. Okay. So they either have to have proof of like the junk vehicle affidavit, or they have to have proof from a will or something like that that gave them the authority to dispose of the vessel. So we will work with them and we'll put out notices for these gatherings well in advance so that owners can contact us and we can walk them through the process of gaining the legal right to do so.
Tom, how many of these vessel turn-in days do you anticipate having per year? Let's say just in Washington.
Yeah, we haven't had one yet. And it's really hard to say how many we would have here. Mm-hmm. I envision right now that we'll have at least one per quarter in different areas of the state, so that even though you may not be in Spokane County, I mean, if you're in Ponderay County, you'd still be able to drag your boat down to Spokane County or something and dispose of it. So hopefully the more interest we get in it, the more we'll do it in more areas, like Tri-Cities, for instance, or something like that. I think the public is going to drive that, the number of turn-in days that we have and where we have them.
So some of these boats, you know, might have some valuable things on them, like electronics, which are probably old, but still some, who knows what's on some of these boats. What about stuff that's removable? What do you do with that? Stuff that has a reusable value.
So with the vessel turning program, we encourage the owners to remove anything of value before turning it in. Okay. However, if they do turn it into the program, the law does state that we have to destroy the vessel. It can no longer be used as a vessel once it's turned into the program. So that doesn't mean we can't use parts of it. And in the past, we have taken parts off of the vessel and tried to sell them through our state surplus site. And that's just really not really cost effective. So what we've done is we've asked our contractors to go ahead and recycle as much as they can and to use whatever funds that they get from that recycling to help lower our burden for the disposal of it.
Oh, so they would sell it and then take it off their bill?
Right.
Something like that. Oh, yeah. So that's creative.
It is.
Huh. And I'm sure some of that adds up, you know. $20 compass here, a $2 life jacket there.
It can, yes. Huh. We have taken some of the stuff off of these vessels, like fenders and stuff like that, and utilized them on other vessels, like anchors and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we find a vessel adrift out there or something, we might throw an anchor on it if we can, if we have one.
So, you know, I'd never thought I'd ask a Howard Stern type question on my show, but I got to ask, what's the weirdest thing you've ever taken off one of these boats that's appropriately mentionable on the radio, on air?
The weirdest things. Well, that's an interesting question because these vessels are so diverse and so unique. Every single vessel presents a unique challenge and a different opportunity to solve a problem. But I think some of the weirdest objects that we get might be just some keepsakes some of these people get. We found weapons on vessels.
Oh, wow.
Ammunition. We found drug needles, unfortunately, yeah, on a lot of vessels. We found pets on vessels, abandoned. Yeah.
Living pets?
Living pets, yeah. That's always a hard thing to deal with sometimes. Yeah. We've also found, you know, personal objects that, pictures, family heirlooms and stuff like that. And we try our best to get those things to either the owners of the vessels or their relatives, mm-hmm, whenever we can.
And I know that some of these boats have been used as drug labs, you know, meth labs. How do you deal with those? Do you have to go through a certain protocol for removal of the chemicals? Because I know that there's a lot of nasty, toxic stuff on those things.
There are, and unfortunately, that's a reality that we have to deal with sometimes on these vessels. And mm-hmm, what we try and do is we try and keep everyone safe and the environment at the same time. And what we do is we hire companies that specialize in the cleaning up of such sites, mm-hmm, so that they do it safely and properly. It's an additional cost to us, but it's something that we do to protect not only the environment, but the residents of Washington State as well.
And I assume if you find weapons, they just have to be destroyed.
We usually contact the local police department or sheriff's department, and they'll come and remove them for us.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Huh. Well, now we got a few more minutes left. What would you like to add before we wrap up here? If you miss, what is it about the program that you like, that you really want to amplify, so to speak?
So this additional funding that we receive from the legislature is a boon for our program. It's going to allow us to do a lot more for the state of Washington and its residents, as well as its water users. We're out there protecting the environment by removing these old dilapidated vessels out of the environment because they're a source of pollution. Mm-hmm. Every minute they spend out there, they're sloughing off contaminants into the environment that's getting into the food chain, which they found evidence of in not only the salmon out there that we eat and the orcas eat, but they found it in the orcas as well. and we're talking about microplastics, we're talking about heavy metals and stuff like that. It's all out there, and we're trying to prevent it from getting into that environment and causing more harm, not only to the aquatic life out there, but up the food chain, orcas, mm-hmm. humans, and everything else. So the more money we have and the more staff that we have so that we can get a lot more of these vessels out of the water quicker, the better we're protecting the aquatic environment of Washington State.
Well, I know for a fact that some of these older wooden boats in particular, even some of the fiberglass boats, have things on them that are outlawed for good reason. You know, leads, asbestos.
PCBs.
PCBs, God knows what else. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
There's a lot of contaminants on these vessels that we work really hard to not only capture, but to remove.
So, Troy, how can people find out about the programs? What's the website address, if you have one? Or how can they contact your program if they want to pursue removing a vessel?
Well, if they want to make a report or if they just have a general question, they can call 360-902-2628 and leave a message. And any one of my team members have access to those messages, and we'll call you back as soon as we're able. Or they can go to our website, and which is www.dnr.wa.gov. Okay. And we're under aquatics on that website. So they can go to that website, and we have our contact information there. They can email us. They can call us. So those are the best ways to get a hold of us.
Okay. So the website is www.dnr.wa.gov/aquatics.
Yes.
And the phone number for reporting or other information is 360-902-2628. So if somebody sees a boat floating by up on their beach in front of their house, they can call that number, and hopefully they'll find the owner. That's the first goal, I would assume.
Absolutely. That's one of our first steps, is to try and reach out to the owner to see if they'll be responsible vessel owners.
All right. Well, Troy, thank you very much. Thank you all for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Seeger at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM. Washington Seeger helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education to support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne, and as always, a special shout out to the band Ku Ich for sharing their music with us at the opening and closing of this program. Thank you for listening, and have a great day. Ha,